Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dying time is here. That's right, we're talking about 1989's Leviathan on Animal Attack April on Kill by Kill. Well, greetings and salutations, Internet. It's your old pal, Patrick Hamilton, coming to you once again from Mining Shack number 7, 16,000 feet. I'm sorry, 16,000 feet below the Atlantic Ocean. This is the Kill by Kill podcast, where normally we talk about horror movie characters and the order in which they die, but every April we take on animal attack movies, and of course this April, it's all aquatic attacks. And what would aquatic attack April be without talking about 1989's a fish starts to live inside of you movie, Leviathan. And of course, there's only one person I trust to make sure that I made it. No one else at Trioceanic would believe me. And then she punches me the fuck out. The one, the only, Gina Radcliffe. How are you doing today, Gina?
That's 1989 in a nutshell, baby. Just
dude, let's sock dude, that woman in the face.
Dude punches a lady in the face. The audience is to be like, yeah.
Woo! Punch her again. I love it when ladies get punched.
Punch that corporate broad.
The only thing missing is if an orangutan punched her. I think that is the one element that would have raised that moment. Now, Gina, I don't want to scare you, but we are not alone. That's right. We have special guests. Now, you may know them, of course, as writers for Bloody Disgusting or among their many podcasts, Horror Queers, but I'm also proud to call them returning champions to our show. The one, the onlys, Joe Lipsett and Trace Thurman. How are you doing, boys?
Hello. Thank you for having us back.
Oh, we love having you back. Oh, I can't wait to get into the homoeroticism of this very erotically charged motion picture, and probably at one point to confuse Trace for Joe or Joe for Trace.
Classic. That's all on you. I can tell them apart.
I can't tell them apart until I need to call on one of them.
I know, fair. But honestly, our listeners say the same thing. They're like, yeah, I sometimes get Trace and Joe confused. And I was like, I think we sound very different. And one of us is much louder than the other one.
It's true. And the tall one is the loud one. So just look for the tall one in the medium.
But you can't say that because people think you're the tall one because apparently you give off tall guy energy, but I'm the tall one.
You do come off tall in photos, Joe. I have to give that to you.
It's because you do. Standing on an apple box.
He strategically put shorter people next to him in photos. That's why
he looks tall in the photo with me because I am shorter than him.
Mother was that, yes.
I'm so happy to have you both on board, taking time out of your busy recording schedule to hop on to this garbage scow as we talked about 1989's Leviathan. Now, neither of you were born when this movie came out, so I guess I have to ask you when you first saw it. We'll go with Trace first.
Joe was definitely born when this movie came out. It's true. But
short and old, says Trace.
This came out literally, was this March of 89?
This was dead ass summer of 1989.
I was born in February of 89, so I was born.
Yeah.
Anyway. I think I saw this for the first time about 4 or 5 years ago. And it was when maybe it was 2 years ago. I don't know. It was when the podcast existed because Joe and I were doing a mini set on aquatic horror for the Patreon. Uh-huh. And this is one of my blind spots. This and Deep Star 6, which honest to God, if you made me tell you the differences between those movies, I don't know if I could tell you.
No, there is no difference. They are similar. Pretty much interchangeable movies.
One of them has BJ and the other one has the bear.
I was watching this and I was like, okay, so they're both underwater. They're both like a creature. Hector Elizondo is in one of them and Miguel Ferrer is in the other one. So
not helping.
How about you, Joe? Was it also a random blind spot for the Patreon?
No. So this one was like a scarred for life. I saw this, I think it must have been sometime around when this came out on VHS or when it was maybe on cable. Mm-hmm. I remember being terrified of both this creature as well as Peter Weller. But I think that was mostly apologies to Peter Weller. I'm sure he's a lovely man. He has a bit of an aged face. And I think I conflated him with his look from RoboCop. So I was like, why is this old man wearing Peter Weller's face?
I thought you were going to say you conflated him with the creature in the film.
Rude. He's aged. He's not that old.
Wild. I'm going to preface this entire recording, by the way. So my note taking for this movie, because I'm so bad about looking at set dressings and designs in this movie, I only paid attention to what was on the walls in this movie. And that's all my notes are. So if I don't remember something that happened in this movie, that's why.
I can't say that this ranks particularly high on the great set decoration scale.
Oh, don't
compared
worry.
Compared to, say, A Nightmare on Elm Street, teenager bedroom, that sort of thing. I mean, you've got some porn. You've got some old-fashioned porn.
So Joe was like, Trace, remember, you got to like, you know, look at the, because that's what they do on Kill by Kill. And I was like, okay, fine, but it's Leviathan. Like, it's going to be a bunch of fucking metal hallways. Yeah. You know what? I use a mental fine tooth comb and I got as many things as I could. So
I love it.
We're going to be talking about that sign that says clean equipment at end of shift. That's next to the sink.
What are you doing to that equipment during your shift? Is a good question.
I mean, this movie is kind of horny, so they were probably fucking it.
It is kind of horny, but it also there's not a lot of chemistry between the two people who are supposed to have it.
Oh, God, I didn't know.
No.
I didn't get horniness from this movie.
There's a lot of looks going on, and they're trying to bring across that thing that you kind of love, or at least I kind of love about Alien, where it looks like everyone on the ship but that milk robot has fucked at least once. You know, just because they're fucking bored.
Whereas, I mean, I'm pretty sure Daniel Stern has fucked everyone on the ship.
When they're asleep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's like making like dummies out of their clothing and having sex with those.
He definitely has an inappropriate hole inside of his underwater suit. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. He even asks, like, can somebody repair my pocket or check my pocket? And you're like, yeah, it's because you've been fingering your dick.
Oh, God. Okay. Gina, don't start fingering our dick. Tell us when you first saw Leviathan. It's not my fault. Joe brought it up.
I mean, it was on cable, and as Trace pointed out, this was interchangeable with Deep Star 6. And when we actually started planning what we were going to do here, and you mentioned Deep Rising, if you remember when we did Deep Rising, I told you that I was surprised that it came out in like 1999. Or 98, whenever it came out, because I basically memory hold it that that came out at the same time as these other movies, which all, you know, and then you had like The Abyss, which was like the classy version of these movies. And then you have these movies all kind of competing with each other. And then when I rewatched Leviathan, I was like, oh, right, this is the one that shamelessly rips off The Thing.
Yes.
And Alien.
And Aliens.
Yeah,
it is Alien and John Carpenter's The Thing's like thoughtless, fashionable twin.
I think this movie is fine. Like, honestly, like this and Deep Star 6, I they're just really fun creature features. Are they particularly original? No. Mm-mm. Are they dumb? Yes. Can these big giant doors that can the characters just push them open even though they're on like a track? Yes, sure.
Sure. Right. But they will also crush a giant monster's head if needed.
Yeah. Yeah. But also they're being operated by a guy named Giuseppe, who's in between cappuccino breaks. Like, there is a carelessness to the movie that is both adorable and must have been infuriating to work on.
It's Italian. Just one of the, come on.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. Like, they headed off to Italy. It's the how they got half the cast was like, we're filming this in Italy. Yeah. And they're like, well, free trip to Italy for me. And they signed up.
Which is kind of how they got people to sign up to be in The Visitor.
Right.
Sure. I mean, why not? I'll be in whatever fucking movie you want if you tip me to Italy.
It's true. Absolutely. Sometimes you get Leviathan and sometimes you get The Talented Mr. Ripley. What do you want?
I think they're on the same level, really.
Truly.
In terms of impact culturally. what I think it is fine. It's a a Gina Radcliffe trademark, it's fine movie.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, it definitely suffers in some of its character work in that about half the actors are not doing enough. Mm-hmm. And then the other half are doing way too much.
Yes. And never the two shall meet.
Right. Oh,
yeah. But it's definitely a movie that we're like, because at least all the actors look very distinct from each other.
Sure.
So it made it really easy to follow along. But question then, do y'all prefer this or Deep Star 6? Or can you even tell me?
Oh, I prefer this.
Because we do have that other film from 1989.
Yeah, I haven't revisited Deep Star 6, so I can't really answer that, but...
From everything I remember, because I saw this and Deep Star 6 and The Abyss, I missed Lords of the Deep at that same summer. I was particularly disappointed in Deep Star 6, seeing how it was the vaunted director of both Friday the 13th and House. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that's going to wake me up in the morning. And I was like, this kind of sucks, and I don't like BJ and the Bear and his non-bearded face in that movie. There's a whole lot of, this seems cheap and dumb. Well, I don't believe Leviathan is cheap and dumb. Right?
But that one doesn't have enough creature in it either. I remember Deep Star 6 not having enough monster.
I definitely, like, when I first watched both of these movies, I watched them back to back, which maybe wasn't the best decision.
Right, they're gonna blend.
Like, we got to the vodka in this one, and I was like, I thought that was in Deep Star 6.
God.
Yeah, I cannot remember for the life of me how the monster appears in Deep Star 6. They drill the wrong hole, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fissure in the ocean floor, not like a parasite in vodka.
Yeah. Yeah. What I think this, what ultimately dooms this a little bit in my mind, because it's fine, is that it doesn't have an underlying, this is kind of what we're getting at. It's just a creature feature. There's nothing more to it than that.
Sir,
it's got some goopy tentacles, and I like it for that, but also... It's just kind of a disco dolly. There's not a thought in its head.
You say just a creature feature, like that's a bad thing. Like Anaconda is just a creature feature, but that's a 5-star film.
I would say in comparison, when the two movies it's referencing most often are films with thoughts in their head. So I'm not the one putting it on that particular comparison pedestal.
The film is.
The movie is.
Yeah.
I mean, do we think that this movie believes it's saying something sort of sage about corporate culture? Because I definitely get the impression that all of the emphasis on Beck and rule following and the corporatization of this mining organization and blah, 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 blah. Sorry, I put myself to sleep briefly.
No.
I think it thinks it's saying something about that.
But okay, that would make sense if it was, if that wasn't a part of Aliens plot.
Yeah.
Wow. Right, exactly.
I agree.
Exactly.
It's just, it's an element it picked up from that movie. And so it's like, we have to have a reference point. It has to be, you know, some sort of dark and ominous intrigue on the outside. Instead of it being a computer telling me, it's Meg, what's her face?
I was going to say,
same looking eyes.
I am shocked they had like the self-restraint to not just make Meg Foster a cyborg or an android on this show.
Yeah, I was reading some trivia about it. And now, granted, this is the IMDb trivia, which is not vetted in any way. And there was a note that said, this takes place in 2027.
Says what? Who?
What?
And I'm like, does it?
Does it?
I'm sorry. Say what?
I did not get any sort of sense that this takes place in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not with those, you died on the Oregon Trail due to dysentery style graphics on the computers.
Oh my God, I love it so much though. I love it when Doc is just like, I'm going to send a memo. And you're like, bitch, you wrote a whole ass letter. I mean, who's got the time? You're being picked off one by one by an aquatic sea creature.
The entire place is collapsing. It's like, I hope you find this email finds you well. Like,
tell my wife and children I love them.
Bitch, nobody got time for that shit.
Not to mention the fact that he's just like putting the data into a computer and he's like, give me a conclusion. And it's like, I don't think so. Like, I would, he's getting better results from that than I would ChatGPT. I'll tell you that right now.
Truly. This movie saw the future.
It did. And it decided not to report the future back to us. So, this movie was produced by two lesser De Laurenti, which is why it was filmed in Italy. It's always a sign of quality. When you get two Laurenti, you cannot place. Like, I'm not sure. Is that a cousin? Is that an uncle? Who's to say? Weirdly, this movie has a ton of Kill by Kill cred. First off, you have the director. And I will put that in dick fingers. Because George P. Cosmatos, you might remember him being a Sly Stallone sock puppet for both Rambo First Blood Part 2 and Cobra, or Kurt Russell's sock puppet director for Tombstone.
I had to look this guy up. I've never seen a single one of his films except for this one. I'm not like really a Sly. I mean, no offense to Stallone. I've never seen any of his like major action films, like the Rambo movies or Cobra or whatever other ones he has. I'm sure there's a
bunch more. You're fine. You're not missing out on anything. I mean, Cobra, I think, is interesting in that it is so diluted, because at one point Stallone, he has a handgun that has a Cobra on the hilt of the gun, of the handgun, and he sticks it down the front of his pants. So the little Cobra looks like his pee-pee.
I don't get it. What do you think it's trying to say?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Maybe he has a powerful gun penis. Might be what he's aiming at.
We do have to give credit to George P. Cosmatos for one thing.
Sure.
He is the father of Panos Cosmatos.
Correct. Better director.
Who actually does have an eye for interesting direction and an interesting feel to his movies.
Yes. He definitely has a vibe.
He got all the talent in the family.
He didn't just inherit a last name. He's a Nepo baby.
He's like a reverse Nepo baby, where like he's actually more talented than the past generation.
I mean, is he going to make more movies? Because he's only made two movies.
Right. I was about to say, when is this guy making another movie? You can't tell me you drop a Mandy and then you're like, I don't know if I have anything else in me.
Supposedly, he has a TBA film coming called Necrocosm.
Love it already.
But there's no Wikipedia page for it. So, you know, it doesn't exist yet.
Right. Sure. The sign of existence is Wikipedia.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at the footnote.
I know that our show does no longer exist because we do not have one.
I'm looking at the footnote. It was announced in March of 2022 and no news has come out of it since. So,
okay. Great. That's a great sign. That is a sign of quality. We're getting a new scary movie, but this guy cannot make a fucking movie called Necrocosm.
Patrick, I'm going to fight you today. I'm excited for a new scary movie.
He is being spicy today. Spicy takes. Oh
boy, he's jet lagged. He's ready to fight. The claws are out.
Yes. No, I shed my last nerve somewhere over the Pacific. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh my God, was it over the Atlantic Ocean?
No, because that's not where Japan... Do I have to put on a map where Japan is?
I'm geographically challenged. I live in a whole other country.
That's true. Well, yes. Yes, you do. Cosmatos has a prickly reputation. People didn't really enjoy being on his set. He was kind of an a-hole. And the reason why is because he, all of his stars kept taking over the movies he was supposedly directing. So after like legitimately one of the biggest hits of 1986 in Rambo First Blood, and then you have Cobra, which is not the hit they want it to be, but it's okay. Leviathan is like hey, I'm going to direct a horror movie and I'm going to scare the hell out of people. He's really pulling that Stephen King Maximum Overdrive trailer energy here.
Yeah.
And reportedly, he was not fun to work with on this set. Nearly coming to blows with several cast members. And then sexually harassing others. I won't tell you which. Let your imagination run wild.
I'm going to guess Amanda Pays and or Lisa Eilbacher.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to guess Daniel Stern, but
well, I mean, yeah, he's just so irresistible on this movie, you know.
of any movie that he's ever been in, is this his hottest? We'll never know. Probably.
Temperature wise, it has to still be Chud because yes. No human being has sweat as much as he does in that movie.
That movie is one long open pore.
Oh God. Just the visual imagery, almost better than anything we see on screen here in Leviathan.
Yeah, we're aiming more for goop in this one. So this entire crew was shipped off to Italy in a rush to make this movie in the midst of a writer strike. Sound familiar? And so the writers in question who are not on set for this movie, it's a fucking murderer's row. So you got Uno, David Webb Peebles, whose credits include shit like Blade Runner, Unforgiven, 12 Monkeys. Like, write a good movie, why don't you? And then numero duo is Jeb Stuart, who was the first person to develop Die Hard. And later he is brought in to work on The Fugitive. So he's no slouch either. And yet, between the two of them, they wrote what is a fun creature feature without a thought in its head. And they're like, this is a perfectly workable script. Head off to Italy. We'll send some goopy creatures in the mail to meet you there eventually. And that's as much information as you're going to get. I scoured the special features of this Blu-ray, everybody.
Nothing.
There's no one nothing wants to on talk this. About it. It does not exist.
Yeah, I guess if it made more money, it would have, maybe they'd care, but it sounded like no one had a good time making this movie, so maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was, you know, they wanted it to be a cheapie, and it just ran into too much competition. 89 is a really busy fucking summer. That is the summer of Batman, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, The Abyss. I believe Field of Dreams is in there. Ghostbusters 2.
Wait. I've got this. So I'm actually looking at a release date of March 17th,
really?
1989.
Oh, fuck me. I don't know. What was I doing?
Nevertheless, I'm also looking at Wikipedia, so maybe it's wrong. But I'm also looking at this budget, which has a footnote next to it, so I have to like check. But it's saying this cost $21 million.
I believe that because they shipped everything off and at the last minute. And cost ran away. Like, what De Laurentiis production comes in under budget is my question to you.
So then, I'm sorry to bring this up one more time. Sure. Guess then what the budget for Deep Star 6 was.
$6 million.
$8.5 million.
Ooh, oh so close.
and guess what the budget for The Abyss is.
Probably about 100 times that.
I was going to say a gajillion, billion, trillion, quillion dollars.
I mean, it's very high for 89, but yeah, it's 43 to 47.
They only almost drown half the cast. A good more than half the cast did not drown in the making of that film.
That's so funny. So I've only seen The Abyss once because my dad rented it for me when I was a kid, but he thought it was the movie The Deep. And he was telling me it was going to be this really fun thriller. And then I get this 2.5 hour like meditation on whatever the fuck they're doing in The Abyss. So I was so bored.
Where's Jacqueline Bisset swimming in a white t-shirt? Let's do this. This does not have Quint from Jaws lamenting that he cannot be bitten by an eel.
I mean, I get it. You know, The Deep, The Abyss.
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Sure. It's all a bunch of watery nonsense.
Mm, exactly.
So very quickly in this movie, we're introduced to all the characters inside of these giant
mech suits?
Deep water mech suits. and you can't tell any of them apart.
No.
We're just ramrodded into meeting them, you know, as the characters they present themselves to be via their voice. You have Buzz Sixpack Parrish, who immediately sexually harasses a coworker.
You know he's the worst because he has two nicknames.
But at least the movie has the good sense to kill him off first.
Yes.
Just that, yeah.
Improbably. Then you have Elizabeth Willie Williams, who is a undersea miner, mm-hmm. played by Max Headroom's confidant, Amanda Pays.
Oh, that's how I know her.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's only two things I know Amanda Pays from: this movie and Max Headroom. And if she did something else, Amanda, please reach out and let me know because I'm unaware of it.
She is also very well, maybe not very well known, but she played Tina McGee in the original The Flash series from the 90s and reprised the role for the 2014 CW series.
Oh, well, there we go.
Oh my God. Guess who she's married to since 1988?
That guy, what's his face? The dentist.
Yes, Corbin Burnson.
Corbin Burnson, right.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Out. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Someone's been married to Corbin Burnson since the 80s?
Since 1988, no joke.
Get the fuck out.
They just sit around talking over their teeth all the time.
Wait. What do we think of Amanda Pays in this movie?
Well, I like her. Yeah, She's fine.
What is she given to do outside of
her story arc is training for sports thing and like getting sexually harassed and then having to kiss Peter Weller. But apart from that, she's fine.
She has an inner dream to be a astronaut.
That's what it is.
That's why she jogs.
Which requires her to jog a lot, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we all saw 2001. Yep.
She hikes up her sweatpants into her butt crack, as you do. She has great underwear. And she gets to flaunt it over and over again. But as far as like a character.
Yes, when I travel down to the Atlantic Ocean floor, I always bring frilly, lacy undergarments.
Man, she wants to feel like a woman. And this is what's helping her right now. And she's got one set of underwear and she's not going to change it for anybody.
No.
Speaking of people being sexually harassed on the Atlantic seafloor, we have Bridget Bowman, played by Lisa Ellenbacher. And of course, we last discussed Miss Ellenbacher when we talked about 10 to Midnight.
Yeah,
she played the daughter of Charles Bronson.
She has been in a ton of 80s stuff, mostly made for television movies. Oh, but yeah, if you're of a certain age, old, you'll recognize her.
Yeah, she's also in An Officer and a Gentleman.
Yeah. Yes.
Nice. I actually really like her in this movie. I was disappointed when Bowman goes out.
I, every time I looked at her, I kept thinking she was Reba McEntire from Tremors because they have the exact same hair.
Oh, yeah.
She does have a reminiscent hair volume. You're absolutely right.
Which, how are you having that hair? Well, I guess it's humid because you're underwater. So, sure. You know what? I'll let it go.
She has to have she has the most challenging role, I think, of having to play a character who seems to enjoy being constantly sexually harassed by every man that she works with.
You're not? You don't enjoy being sexually harassed? I don't call it sexual harassment when it's done to me. I call it flirting.
You know, just ass smacking, you know, hey, baby, come into my bunk harassment. And she's just like, oh, you.
I thought you were talking about my boobs.
Well, this movie dares you to believe that her boobs exist as the camera is just placed on a tripod in front of them for a full 2 minutes of a scene. Like, she doesn't exist, but her breasts definitely do in that framing.
Mm-hmm. Filmmaking.
Then we have Tony DeJesus Rodero, played by Broadway actor Michael Carmine. And this is where things get a little sad. Carmine was a big Broadway actor. He was on TV. He did a lot of movies. This is one of his very last screen roles as he lost his life to AIDS-related illness mere months after this film premiered. So some of the low energy might in fact be the fact that he's battling a something that's killing him actively during every second of filming.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was known for a kind of laconic Spanish Harlem flavor, but compared to a lot of his roles, this is much lower energy. And I think he made a choice, but I think some of those choices were informed by his real life circumstances.
Right. He was only 30 years old too. Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, but I mean, Jesus Christ, we were robbed of so many fucking incredibly talented people in this entire thing. Mm-hmm. It makes me want to piss on Ronald Reagan's grave again. If you have the opportunity to piss on Ronald Reagan's grave, do it today.
Do so.
Make it rain on that asshole.
Don't forget to dribble a little bit on Nancy as well while you're
sure.
over there.
Yeah. Well, she's the throat goat, so she'll probably just drink it up. So,
oh my God.
Then we've got G.P. Cobb, who's a weird riff on Archie Bunker, kind of played by Gary Marshall's Lucky Penny, Hector Elizondo.
Why the Archie Bunker comparison? Does he say things that are explicitly homophobic in this movie?
It is that he goes on an extended monologue riff in an effort to establish what his character is, which is a stick in the mud. He loves being on the bottom of the ocean because that means he's away from his family. He's like, then you go for a drive and the air's too gross to breathe and your wife is quote unquote as fat as she ever was and your kids aren't hooked on drugs because they found new drugs to experiment with. And you're like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, he's giving off big dad energy, isn't he?
Yeah,
but he is really worried about his wife thinking he contracted herpes. Undersea.
So which much means so, I have before. To believe at one point he did, right?
Yes,
right.
Absolutely that. Mm-hmm.
You can't bring it up that much and then, like, I can't come home with another sexual venereal disease again.
He doth protest too much.
If only that was the line of dialogue, right?
Right.
She forgave me the last time. I can't do this again. God damn it.
I only fucked that one fish. You've got to give me one fish.
Sure. The last time I just got herpes. This time I killed the entire crew.
I didn't feel that entire claw underneath my clothes. So continuing to round out this cast, we have Justin Jones, played by eternal hottie Ernie Hudson. Let me tell you how difficult this movie makes it for Ernie Hudson. Well, this is a really attractive dude. And for the latter half of the movie, it goes out of its way to make a really hot looking guy look ugly.
Oh.
I think what? He looks good the entire time.
I think he looks good.
I actually found him very attractive. So
and he's the most charismatic
Ernie Hudson's the most charismatic guy in most movies he's in.
But I'm not going to lie. The way that this movie does him dirty, though, it's like it knocks a full star off the film for me.
Yes.
His exit.
But here's the thing, though. Like, I get it. You know, the fact that he dies at all when he does is unforgivable.
Bullshit.
But that we don't even really. I watched this and I was like, did he die? Like, I think we see him go underwater. Like, I don't see his death. So not only do you kill the black guy in the movie last, so the white people can have their like straight heterosexual fantasy, but like you don't even like give him a good death.
Nope.
Right. Why doesn't the monster just throw him out to sea and they're like, oh, no. And then he pops up at the end like in Jaws.
This movie, honestly, I didn't realize how many deaths are off screen, though. And I have to assume it's something about either we didn't know how to film it or we couldn't operate the puppet correctly or something. But like, we're not seeing most of these people die. Like Daniel Stern just, you know, he's like, oh, I'm poking at my arm. And then the next thing we see, he's in a body bag.
He's just a corpse. Yeah. He's just a corpse. Like he just, you know, dies with this whatever this parasite is, like, you know, how it kills you first before it, you know, before this creature grows inside of you.
But you're also getting absorbed into it, like the Freddy Krueger soul pizza.
Oh boy. It's
a walk-in fish soul pizza. At the end, including like people's faces who are like, I don't want to be inside of this fish monster. And I was like,
they still have sentience.
Wish I could help you. I don't know how to unfuse you from that fish monster, my friend.
Mm-mm.
And of course, Not last and not least, observing all of this underwater action while he darns his socks and sews on patches is Steven Beck, played by Peter RoboCop Wants an Oreo Weller. Do any of you know the Oreo story from RoboCop?
No.
Okay. This came up in the 6-hour RoboCop making of documentary that was released a little while ago. Nice. And apparently he got so into character that he would only refer to himself as RoboCop. And during filming in one of those warehouse shoot 'em ups, he's in the entire getup and an AD is running up to him going, "All right, we'll start in 3, 2. And he's got Oreos in his hand from the Crafty. And he turns to this AD and he goes, "RoboCop wants an Oreo." And this was like the last fucking straw for this guy. And he takes every Oreo that was in his hand and puts them all in his mouth and goes, "I don't have any Oreos left, RoboCop." And they shut down the fucking film for that day. He's so pissed off that he was not handed an Oreo.
Wow. I'm not going to lie. I don't want to date the episode. Feel free to edit this part out if need be, but I'm not going to lie. One of the things that I've most loved about the Civil War press tour is all of Kirsten Dunst's quotes from various interviews. But I love her claim where she's like, "I can't do method acting because that seems like a man's energy. Like, no, I got to go home to the kids and stuff."
She said that's something only male actors can afford to do.
There we go. Yes. Yes and true. Both of them.
Yeah.
No matter how you want to put it.
It's also, if a woman method acted, she'd be known as a bitch and difficult to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, too difficult. Men are allowed to be difficult. And I think he loved sniffing his own farts for a good part of a decade. And then reality came in and says, "I'm a human skull face who's just got a vibe. And if I don't bring fun to any of this, no one's going to ever want to work with me again."
He looked in the mirror. It's like, "Where the hell are my eyebrows?"
He's so dour in this movie, though. Like, I get it. That's part of the arc, but it's just like, oh my God, who was having the least amount of fun on this movie? And it's like, Peter Weller, put up your hand.
Yeah, he looks, this feels like a contractual obligation. Like, his performance and the role both feel like they're contractual obligations.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, he has a mortgage, he's got a payment due, and he's going to arrive and he's going to say the lines, but
that's
okay, more than that.
So I don't know all the conditions. I get someone would be like unhappy working on a movie, blah blah blah, whatever. But like, for y'all, if you're gonna be an actor, wouldn't you love to be in a movie like this?
Of course.
I would like, think so. Just like play with these fucking like lamprey Stan Winston creatures, like, what? Yeah, by all means, and like do molds to get your bodies morph. Like, I'm sure it's not actually fun in practice, but like, my dream is to be in a movie like this.
I would think it would be a lot more fun than other things. Like, it's a lot more fun than being locked in the RoboCop costume. Right. Like that, I think would drive you crazy, and I think it drove him crazy.
Here you get to run around prison with a bunch of phallic weapons that like light things on fire and are like 5 feet long.
It's like you're playing the hero. So, you know, why not have some fun with it instead of looking just, you know, bored for 75% of it?
Honestly, I think I would like his performance more if they didn't shoehorn that romance in. I mean, romance in quotes, mind you, with him and Willie. Like, I don't even know why we're doing that in this movie.
Yeah, what does she see in him? I know what he would see in her.
Sure.
Because she's trying, but I mean, I don't know. It's like date the scarecrow.
But like the entire extent of his characterization is he's very focused on the rules and how everything goes. Okay, so why are you flirting and looking for opportunities to be alone with one of your, you know, with someone who you're their superior?
Right. Yeah.
The minute you surface, she's going into fucking NASA. Like, this is not an opportunity.
Well, and he's a geologist. Like, he doesn't, that's part of why he doesn't want to be there, is because he's too good for this kind of thing.
But maybe that's why he's acting so bored, because he's a geologist.
I mean, I will say the funniest sight gag in the entire movie is how he is a not literal fish out of water, but, you know, the character is out of place. But I love that insert shot of him reading like the 10-minute manager.
Yeah.
Like, that was so pretty funny.
It's funny.
We needed more of that energy.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, totally. Speaking of energy, not in this scene, but lurking in the background is Dr. Glenn Doc Thompson, who has decided to blow off his only job on the Atlantic seafloor and not show up for a medical emergency when DeJesus nearly dies. Just walking back.
Let me interrupt you. Do you feel as if that was supposed to be something at some point? Like that, or were they just, you know, they sort of set him up as kind of sinister when he's not. I mean, like, yeah, fine. The letting the escape pods go, but also it was in, you know, it was well-intentioned, I guess, because, you know, he was trying to prevent this thing from getting to surface. And, but like they set up as, you know, oh, he's just, you know, blowing off these emergencies and he's kind of sneaky and skulking around. And what is it with this guy? And it turns out nothing. There's nothing with this guy.
It feels like a first draft, right? Where, you know, once again, we're cribbing from Alien. So, okay, this is our Ash figure. Let's make him a little bit shady. And then we drop that subplot in another draft, but nobody changed the character's actions early in the film.
I feel like in an earlier draft, he was in cahoots with Meg Foster's character.
Sure, yeah.
Which, but then maybe someone read and said, you know what, that's a little too much like Aliens. Let's drop back a little bit. We'll make him more like Wilford Brimley in The Thing instead.
Right.
There we go.
I think on the scale of it, you have Beck in the middle between all the our working class heroes. Mm-hmm. And then you have Doc, who does definitely believe he's too good to be there, but knows he's condemned to being there because this is the only job that will hire him to be a doctor anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I think he just mentally checks out. I feel like they're drafting a little bit from the doctor character in Outland. Has anyone ever seen Outland here?
Ages, like years ago.
A space western that was spoiled for me by Mad Magazine, like all horror movies in the 80s.
I'm sorry, what is this called?
Outland with Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Yes.
Would have even given that a thought to watch.
It's a genuinely good movie. But it's a weird reference point, but it's one of those that it got some juice because it came out like right after Alien. So it's kind of has that vibe, but it's really just a space western. And I think to a degree, they kind of want to make this like a sea western where they're all trapped in a small town with a destructive force, and who will escape and who will live and who will die. And he's the kind of chaotic character where you don't know where he stands, which I think works on paper. And I think the film is a little confused on how to realize that in a way that creates genuine drama. So the crew here is on the seafloor mining silver and other precious metals in a fashion I'm sure won't contribute to the decimation of our oceans and sea life. And I was struck during the whole sequence with DeJesus panicking on the seafloor that we just have more warning lights. There are just a skull and crossbones.
You're dead.
Imagine like laying in a hospital, like, you know, you got all the wires and like, you know, you see alarm going off and it's like a little skull and crossbones.
Right. <on your monitor. laughs> I mean, you know, you're going to know what's going on and it's nothing good.
Calling her says that's supposed to be happening.
It doesn't say code blue. It's just a skull and crossbones, but I'm still alive.
I mean, for now, the skull and crossbones is keeping. Yeah. Just let that beep for a little bit longer and see how your attitude fares. So we get a lot of like working class. This is what the union says. We're picking up a lot of Alien vibes here from the crew. And when it is revealed a little bit after this, that Sixpack has a titty mug. That is the least surprising thing I'd ever seen on a motion picture.
Ooh. But yes. You know what? in this like communal hall, I guess it's the mess hall, I don't know. But y'all, on the wall, there is a piece of what looks like computer paper in landscape orientation taped to the wall. Uh-huh. And it says the word think.
Did I do good? Otherwise, how would you know?
Did I get it? Did I do good?
Yeah, great.
Is that like the equivalent of a hang in there, cat?
Don't worry, I have about 15 more bullets on here. Oh, you better believe there is a hang in there poster in this movie.
Oh my God. The only thing missing is you're not allowed to play handball in that hallway type of notice that we get in Friday the 13th Part 5.
I am also disappointed in the lack of a you don't have to be crazy to work here, but it helps sign.
Or even something like a, you know, day 30 without any accidents and then like...
Yeah,
falls off.
I was gonna say that six pack dies are like zero.
I do like how they have a countdown for how many days until they're picked up, because their 90-day shift is going to be over soon.
Yeah,
and six pack spits on the whiteboard and wipes it off with his fist.
Yeah,
that is gross. Other people touch that.
He's disgusting. He is just. So disgusting in this movie.
He's grody. And I know he's supposed to be grody, but you don't have to go that hard. Like the titty mug, it does a lot of the work for you.
I will say otherwise, Patrick, because at least someone is fulfilling the brief. Like you can tell Daniel Stern is all in on this role. He's not a pleasant character, but he's having a good, doing something.
The character is very vivid in that he's absolutely disgusting, but he's he's also having a good time playing him.
But that's the thing though. So when the credits roll in this, when you're walking out of the theater, which characters do you remember leaving this movie? And I do think Daniel Stern Sixpack is one of them. I would also say Ernie Hudson.
Yes.
And that's it.
Fini. Period.
Period. I mean, there's other woman. There's not Reba McEntire woman.
Right. Not Reba McEntire woman. My favorite DC superhero. Yes, I think in terms of fulfilling the brief, in terms of like our tried and true Friday the 13th metric of, you know, you're only going to be on screen for so long. So how do you remind the audience that you exist so that when you die, people go, oh, no, not six pack, I guess. You definitely miss him in terms of his presence.
Right.
Yeah.
Who else is going to steal alien looking creatures from the sea floor and stick them inside somebody's mech suit?
Man.
Yes.
Honestly, I'm going to say though, like, so I think the creature effects by Sam Winston look great in this movie, but I don't think that Cosmatos and his cinematographer shoot it very well because we get so many shots of the people's faces in this creature, but we never get a good look at this thing in like whole form. And I think that's a huge missed opportunity for this.
It also seems to move in a way I don't understand. Is it a squid that has tentacles where all the tentacles have teeth, which is fine? Mm-hmm. Does it have legs? Does it have a giant tail? When it's chasing them later on, it kind of moves. It glides like it's on a dolly, like it's on a little train wheels.
But it probably is actually on a dolly. So that may be why you think that.
Wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we should note there's a person who plays this, right? Like it's credited as Tom Woodruff Jr. plays the lead creature. It definitely, I mean, I listened to your episode on Deep Rising and it kind of gives that same vibe of like, oh, is this eight different creatures in one and they can all do different things with different appendages?
Yeah, I think in a way it is because it can morph into all those things. Whereas the Deep Rising octopi, squid man, god, Cthulhu, is whatever it wants to be. At least this has an internal explanation for why sometimes mouths be having teeth. And you're like, okay, it comes out of people. It's fucking with genes.
I'm sorry. it explains why mouths be having teeth, or do you mean why palms be having teeth?
Oh my God. That I needed more of that kind of visual imagery as well, because that is a haunting moment when that palm opens up and there's just a row of teeth. But then it's like, where is the rest of that kind of stuff?
But again, it's great. But then I'm just like, okay, well, this is kind of your half-ass attempt at doing the defibrillator scene and the thing. And that's it.
Yeah. Right. That's what I'm talking about. Like when the times when the movie gets potentially interesting, you can hear almost hear somebody behind the scenes saying, copyright.
cut away.
But here's the thing, let's pull it back a little bit. But here's the thing, though. Yes, I agree with everything you're saying, but it all looks really good. So like it's the idea that's stupid because it's a ripoff, but the execution I think is pretty well done.
It is. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you.
But it also it never really has the courage of the thing's convictions.
Yeah.
Where their Botine's worked to the point where he's like, listen, this is going to be gross and weird. And you think, well, that's the grossest, weirdest thing I'm going to see. And then you're like 5 minutes later, the grossest, weirdest thing you've seen. And they don't have that many gross, weird things because they're stretched too thin.
Yeah.
Because they committed to doing all the creature stuff and they're behind on all the creature stuff when they arrive in Italy. And they're like, holy shit, we're never going to make it on time. And then they commit to making those giant underwater suits.
Yeah.
And so he's like, hey, this is going to buy us more time. No, it isn't. You just added twice the amount of work. And that's why I think you see a lot of like six packs, you know, melding body and shadow rather than seeing any part of it. Or
But I think if you didn't know about all this behind the scenes drama, you could look at that and say, oh, yeah, that's a creative choice. You know, we're not trying to go overboard with the creature. I think the issue is that the movie itself feels so much more like a schlocky B movie that the fact that it doesn't show the creature that much, you're kind of like, well, what the fuck are you doing then?
It doesn't have the threatening, oh my God, that person's going to get it in the worst way I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it occasionally does have that energy. And I think that buoys it. You know, when Cobb has a palm with teeth, that's like, oh shit, that's cool. And I don't need to see that chomping off somebody's nose or anything, but I just need more of those small, that shit is crazy moments. You know, when a leg gives birth to a slug.
I like that. That was good.
Those toes have problems in that leg. That is a crazy ass leg that comes off.
But it's funny that we can all pinpoint specific moments almost in agreement, because certain scenes, certain effects really do pop, and then the rest of the time you're like that one moment where we're nearing the climax and Willie gets separated and it's like she doesn't know which way to go down the hallway, and then they just grab her and pull her, but like I think we see the creature in silhouette and you're like, it could be atmospheric, but it also mostly feels like we don't know how to light this thing properly, or it isn't going to move the way that we need it to. So much of it feels like we're watching concession filmmaking in progress.
I think Cosmatos does not have an internal drive to create those moments. I think they happen by accident. Because he has a decent cinematographer, because probably the editor's working overtime, but he never creates a sense of geography. Every hallway looks like every other hallway. And you can say that kind of works in Alien, but I don't know that it really works here. When they're rushing to get from one end of the base to the other, we've never seen them do it before, and therefore there's no sense of accomplishment or, oh my God, they're way too far behind. None of it seems to, you see like one side of that fish creature, but not in a menacing way. Like, oh my God, he's right on top of him or her. And I don't need to see the whole, we need to do that. But I do think you need to pick your places to really make that creature threatening rather than just weird and gross.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
For example, where I feel like the movie comes up slightly short is when DeJesus is attacked by yet another burnt oven mitt with teeth, Gina.
I noticed that. Yeah, he's doing the whole, you know, trying not to make it look like he's controlling it himself, but he's controlling it himself.
Yes. Sure. And what makes the rest of the scene work is that you have an actor that's playing off it. When Ernie Hudson like grasps his own chest, like, oh my God, I don't even know what to think about that. That's when I'm engaged in that scene, because he's really playing the body horror of don't get near me with that giant burnt slug with teeth. I don't want to touch it and I don't want to touch you. And when he leaves the room and closes a giant door behind him, you're like, yeah, I'm on Ernie Hudson's side. That's what I would do. But I don't think that's not because George P. Cosmatos is like, we're really going to kill him in the scene. I think that's actors making choices and the editor's like, we keep this take in.
Sure.
I will say the number of times that somebody kind of backs out of a room slowly when they see something that they don't know how to process, I really appreciated that, because I'm really used to Hollywood productions in particular where people just instantly become action heroes. And it's like, I'm going to, you know, grab a fire axe and hack at you or something. And instead, I love that Jones just kind of goes, what the fuck? I'm going to get help, but I can't do anything. But I'm going to lock you in because I don't want this to get out.
And I think it's a very quick ramp up from Sixpack discovering the flask of vodka that has the mutagen in it, sharing it with Lisa Ellenbacher. And then the next morning he's got like weird black bumps on him, on his skin, and he just slowly melts into a fish.
All right, wait. Are y'all ready for the next piece of wall decor?
Sure.
Oh my God. I have my notes. Daniel Stern is mopping in front of Bowman, Lisa Eilbacher, whatever the fuck her name is. There's a piece of what seems to be computer printer paper, but in portrait mode this time, taped to the wall. And it says Super Bowl, Sunday, January 7th. And I looked this up. None of the Super Bowls in 86, 87, 88, 89, or 90 were anywhere. They were all like in late January, which might give credence to the idea that this is set in the future.
I was going to say, will it be 2027?
Yeah.
It's like, we've decided to start football season in July, and therefore we're going to do the Super Bowl in January.
But folks, that's really exciting, because that means that football will persevere into the future, according to the Leviathan world, whereas in the Friday the 13th world, hockey is a thing of the past. It's gone completely extinct.
And we're coming up on that date. Isn't that 2025?
It is this year.
Yeah.
Okay. Do y'all know when the Jetsons was set? Was the Jetsons set like recently, like as in like around now, or was it like closer to the year 3000?
No, I think it is supposed to be like now. I think it's somewhere in the 2020s.
Shit, that sucks.
We're not getting anywhere close to the awesome mid-century modern design that's in the Jetsons. I'll tell you that right now.
I just always wonder how air highways work in the Jetsons, because they always seem to fly in a straight line, but there's no markers for the quote-unquote roads in the Jetsons. I always confused by that.
Let that robot drive. That robot knows what it's doing.
Oh, sure. Driving a Tesla. Perfectly safe.
Listen, it's nothing like a Tesla. This is an improbably shaped object that probably has no aerodynamics to it. Certainly, you can't see it when you're backing up. So there's no way Tesla would produce a vehicle as obtuse as that and put it out on the market for people to buy.
Just confirm you, the Jetsons are set in 2062. So we've still got some ways to go where we can invent our flying cars.
Fingers crossed. I will get that robot made by the time I die. So there we go. another place where the creatures come up a little bit short is when Sixpack falls off of this cliff Because he's fucking around. And he lands in this bed of sea worms. And everyone goes, oh no, sea worms. And then the sea worms do nothing.
I completely forgot about this scene. But yeah, when we get that reaction, I thought, oh, do these things do something? I don't remember that. No, they fucking don't. They just look like flora.
just waving in the sea winds. They don't, their mouths don't move. They don't like, they're not like, oh, that they're dead for sure. But some, one of them goes, how is she going to get out of there when
she's going to walk Pace through? That's down. How.
Yeah. Just walks right fucking through them. And they find this Russian ship called the Leviathan. And they bring back a giant safe that has everyone's files in it. One stashed thing of vodka and then a full bottle of it.
Also, the files that basically say all these people died.
Yeah.
And they're like, cool.
Cool.
I have to assume that it's like their full medical record or something, though. Or do you think it's like, oh, the Russian equivalent is that we also have all of their work information. Like this person was promoted from ensign to marshal or something.
I also think it has their effects. So
yeah,
here's the stuff that's going back to their family is in each of those little expandable files.
But,
is
okay. My guess. Okay. All right. So question for all of you, and like to keep it real, like if you were really working on this ship and if you were Daniel Stern the rapist in this movie,
finally a mindset I can get into,
would you have drank the vodka in that flask that you found in a scuttled Russian ship?
Sure. No. He seems like a fucking idiot, so yes.
Even Bowman
is like, come on, vodka's my favorite drink.
Vodka's
my
favorite drink.
I think
what Bowman
she's
wants
willing
to
go for the thrill. She knows that it's illicit. She knows that it's been that it's she's been not going to get it out of the big bottle. And she
all
goes
so
for
dry.
It. Yeah. The entire boat is dry. She wants to wet her whistle. I kind of understand that.
You would think in the year 2027, they would have seen a movie like Leviathan that would tell them, hey, don't drink vodka that you find on a scuttled Russian ship.
Yeah. You don't know how long that's been there. I don't know that it's been held inside of a chilled safe. So you would think, I don't think vodka can really go bad.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And you wouldn't assume that there is a deadly mutagen in it that's going to kill you in 8 hours.
You should probably assume that of most things. Well,
but that's the thing, right? By 2027, realistically, a movie would have come out like Leviathan that would have told them, like, hey, I've seen that movie before. But that doesn't
Movies don't exist in this universe, as we saw. Like, they are so hard up for entertainment in this. Like, we get excited at the idea of Russian porn.
I mean, who doesn't?
Truly.
It's the world leader, from what I understand.
As a sidebar, 1989, and basically we've got a disease that produces lesions on the skin, and also the people that we get the contaminated virus from is Russia. I'm just like, oh boy, the 80s. Okay.
That does make sense though, right? Like we're like, is this the height of the Cold War? Or the end after the Cold War.
Yeah, pretty much at that point. But I do think that there might be something to the idea of how this disease presents itself, that it's trying to be metaphorical, which I genuinely hope nobody knew about Michael Carmine's condition, because that would have been exceedingly bad taste to proceed with how it was presented.
That was it. If that, I feel like it's a subtext, and that people just don't know, because you can honestly see a through line that makes sense for Carpenter's The Thing. And here it just doesn't want to think about it that hard. It just wants to turn people into fish people. That's it. Sure. That's its only goal. Wants a nice little pat on the head. And a little tickle of the gills.
I don't even know if it's fish people, man. I don't even know what this thing. It's lamprey-like. Like, we see the lampreyness of it, but
yeah,
I don't see no gills.
Well, when it comes out of the ocean at the end, when it's like Godzilla standing in the ocean.
Yeah.
Then it's a lot more fish head like. It also has three arms.
It also has like faces of people on it with yes. that yes. keep saying like, help me.
It's so upsetting.
Because somehow they're still alive.
That's what I'm saying. Honestly, no. When we get the shot, it's of DeJesus' face on this thing when they're still in it the is. Ship and it's like, yeah. kill me. And I was like, you're alive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is what traumatized me when I was a kid. It was so upsetting to think of, oh, you could be appropriated by this thing, just like fused into a mass with other people and still have enough cognizance to say, help me, kill me.
I don't know, man. Like, honestly, for me, like, maybe it's my lazy side coming up, but it's like, cool. I'm alive. I'm stuck on this thing and I'll get to go basically be on tour as it like destroys humanity.
Yeah. But this also, like, there's that one. And then I think the one that comes up at the ocean at the end is actually the six-pack Bowman fish person. Because the one that has DeJesus on it, it gets its face crushed in a giant right. door.
Oh, I just assumed that a piece, like a toe, was cut off and it grew into the other thing.
Well, it does tell you that it happens that way, but I think... You kill enough of it and then it implodes. I don't think it can recover that fast.
Well, what you need to make sure you do is kill all the feet.
Kill feet. Aim for the feet. It's like the anti-zombie. The zombie, aim for the head.
You know, this won't mean anything to any of you guys, but in the Suicide Squad game, you have to like kill people by shooting their feet.
Oh, okay. Sure. Things are going great over at Rocksteady.
That's how you get health. You can kill them, or if you want health from them, you have to shoot their feet first before you kill them. Sure. I'm not even joking.
What an interesting dynamic.
I mean, I know if someone shot me in the foot, I would absolutely be willing to help them.
Yeah.
No boy, no.
I'm sorry. I used to have toes. Would you like my health?
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it.
Perfect. Yeah, I Ernie Hudson, I feel, is providing the most energy once Sixpack is dead. He's the one providing all the juice for all the catchphrases.
Yes.
And then everyone's like, we're in a movie. We are acting. Right. There is a creature on this thing we're on.
Well, okay, wait. Can we give credit to the other person who is being so fucking extra in this movie? Because this movie is nothing without Meg Foster just pointing a remote at the, at the TV and being like, fuck you all. I love her. I will hear nothing bad about her.
Okay. I agree. Honestly, I want her to be in more of this movie. I want her to be secretly on this ship in a closet with a camera in it. Like
like she has a duplex that's just attached to it that they don't have a door to.
Basically, yes. That's what I want.
Shaq 8.
Shaq 8.
Honestly, you know what? This is the kind of movie that is ripe for a remake because it's an imperfect film, but like, I guess it's not really well known, so you don't have the IP for it, but like you could make a really good version of this movie.
Well, Amazon owns MGM, right? It didn't stop them from remaking Roadhouse. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it would take much to convince them. Like, here's a thing that you own that's good, but not great. What if you made something great out of it? Mm-hmm. They might bite.
Well, the thing, like, what if you actually made Alien Underwater? You know?
Right. And I think what's stopping anyone from doing that is anytime you work with water, it fucking sucks.
And it's so expensive.
Yes.
Well, I wonder how many people are yelling at us right now and saying like, well, underwater.
No, I already thought about underwater. No. Underwater is a Lovecraftian sci-fi adventure, but it's not like this. Like, it's not this. It's not this.
They're not trapped in one location. They get out of the location. What's the beautiful magic trick of underwater is that instead of being trapped in one space, trying to get to the surface, they're like, fuck, this place is dead. We got to walk for 45 minutes. And they make a fucking movie out of it.
It's so interesting because I was looking at like, you know, I logged this in Letterboxd and I saw someone, I don't remember who it was, but they didn't like this movie, Leviathan.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, yeah, it's alien underwater, but none of the alien attacks actually happen in the water. And I was like, but they are underwater. Like, did you want them to be on the ocean floor, which is what underwater does?
Do any of the alien attacks happen in outer space, if that is what the definition is?
Yeah, exactly that. Fuck that person.
I just
that person doesn't understand how movies work.
I just want to point something out about regarding Meg Foster. Do y'all know who Meg Foster used to be married to in the 70s?
Oh my God, no, but tell us.
Stephen McHattie.
What?
Can you Canadian imagine treasure? Just running into them as a couple and how intimidating they must have been.
Oh my God, I know. Like her blue eyes just like x-ray through your skin and like blow a hole through your back.
I was going to say, it's like the energy of those two, you're going to be, it's that meme, right? You know, we saw you across the bar and we like your energy, only the energy is intensity.
We saw you, we stared intensely at you across the bar.
No, I'm sorry, because the ideal husband for Meg Foster, for going by the eyes alone, is Tim Matheson.
Right.
Blue staring eyes. Oh my God. It's like fucking Village of the Damned. Adults.
Just icy blue wherever you look. Mm-hmm. When Bowman starts to figure out that she's as sick as a person who is turning into a fish man in the next room, she goes, fuck this. Goes into the shower, and while I don't want to promote, you know, or encourage suicidal ideation or anything,
yeah,
she puts two together and is like, nah, no gills for me.
I was gonna say she's got the right idea.
No, I know. It's a thing where I agree with you, Joe. I actually like Bowman as a character. We don't get to know her very much, but I this actress, I think, is doing a really good job of like making her like at least involving, compelling in some way. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I would have had the balls to actually slit my wrist. Like not to like get on suicidal ideation. Like I'm not trying to like promote suicide, but I've always thought like if pressed in a situation like this, if I had to kill myself, what would I do? I think I'd do the decompression thing. Like just fucking like implode me.
Ooh, pop.
Okay, but you would feel it if even for like a fraction of a second. This bitch walks into the shower and slits her wrist and bleeds to death.
Yeah,
it's rough. Well,
it's hot, you know, it's relaxing.
Yeah, her titties are all out. It's great.
If you got them, flaunt them to the grave.
She's got the great tits. We stared at them for 2 minutes earlier, so we know that they're fantastic.
Yeah. So they die. They put them in the same body bag because you're conserving body bags.
Sure.
And then wouldn't you know it, under the covers, they be melding.
So they actually did get to fuck, is what we're saying.
In a way,
on the door leading to the room where Six Pack's body is, it says, there's a sign, this door must be kept closed.
Shocking.
Good advice.
I mean, honestly, more people should have been heeding that advice the entire time.
And, oh my God, I have a twofer for y'all. When Bowman, when they are in the shower, there's a sign in the shower that says sterile towels.
Okay. Who's sterilizing those towels?
I don't know. But it really feeds my opinion of the film when I catch things like this.
But you know why? That's why this place is falling apart, because we're spending time sterilizing towels instead of like sticking pieces of gum in to like fix shaky bits.
Right. It's falling apart, but they have sterile towels for days. And whatever their recycling thing is, where they put entire trays into the trash.
Right. Like, is that just gobbling it all up or does it just clean it?
It's making it into sterile towels.
There we go. Trade a towel. Got it.
Trade a towel. The natural progression of life. And so they management is essentially they're saying like, don't let the crew know what's going on. You know, this is, you need to keep this contained. And so they end up just like saying, hey, help us take this to the port, and we can we'll jettison this off into the briny blue. And meanwhile, they're feeling the bodies move inside this body bag. And they're like, hey, they're still alive. Uh-uh, they're not. They're becoming fish people. And you got to flush them. You got to flush them now.
They don't do it flush fast enough. A lot. And
gotta,
that is
flush,
not.
Got to flush them like a goldfish.
That is not the word I would have first thought of when seeing the device they are using to quote unquote flush these things.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's not exactly an airlock that you're launching Spock out into space. Right?
No. Yeah. And the funny thing is that from what we come to learn of this creature, just flushing it would have meant that it would immediately have gotten out and then probably gotten to the surface and killed a bunch of people. So in a way, it's actually better that it ends up killing a bunch of them
here. I don't give a fuck about that. I care about myself and I want to live. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. The world can die. I'm underwater.
Fuck the world. What's the world ever done for me?
I was going to say, noted humanitarian, Trace Thurman, everyone.
No, honestly, it's one of those things that it's such a trope in these movies. Be it like this kind of movie or like a disaster movie, like Randy Quaid, Independence mm-hmm. Day, where it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, like you have to do this thing. You have to sacrifice yourself to save the world. And I'm kind of like, or I could just watch the world go down and still be alive during it. It's fine.
I love that you've decided to have this apocalypse inertia where you see the
I
worst
love
thing
myself.
That's ever going to happen. You're like, I don't know. I could still hang out.
I love myself far too much to sacrifice myself for the world. I'm sorry.
Well, I'd rather be on the back of some mutant fish for the rest of my life.
So are you saying, Trace, if you were in a knock at the cabin situation, like all they would say is the scenario, it's like, man, yeah, the world could take care of itself. I'm going to stay right here in my cabin. What has the world ever done for me?
The world can absolutely take care of itself.
With my hubby and my cute kid, we're just going to stay here and hope for the best.
No, because I'm going to be like, Taya Leone and her father in Deep Impact, when they just stand and watch the wave come for them. By all means, like I will sit on my couch with my husband and my two dogs. We'll put on like some American Dad and we will wait for the apocalypse to take us,
the giant wave to mm-hmm. succumb you in Colorado. Yep. That's gonna take a while, my friend.
My point exactly.
He'll get through at least two or three episodes then.
They're short, they're 22 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. It's on Hulu, there's no commercials, it's fine, there's three episodes.
Hulu, bringing only the best entertainment to you as a tidal wave washes towards you.
And also is revealing that you've decided in any apocalyptic scenario, you're Taya Leone.
Absolutely. It's not the first time I remember crying in a movie, but it's one of the few times where I remember like seeing someone choose to die in a mm-hmm. horror movie, period.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it just always stuck with me, man. Deep Impact over Armageddon any day of the week.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%.
Yes. No. Anytime. Fucking Armageddon. I know. I don't come to it for realism, but it did have NASA's approval. NASA was a part of making that film. And at no point did they say, you know what? Fire doesn't happen in space. Mm-hmm. When that satellite thing blows up. You don't need fire. It's not a component. There's no oxygen to burn.
So you think the NASA reps were just on set during this Michael Bay movie and they were like, oh my God, this is going to be so good. Such good publicity for NASA. We're in this Michael Bay movie.
I mean, they improved the script.
Yeah. They filmed on NASA locations. There was approval.
Maybe they thought when it said, and then an explosion happens on the asteroid, they were like, well, surely they know fire can happen. So it's going to be like a space explosion, but not like an explosion.
No.
Wait, do we think that NASA was on board with Leviathan and they were like, yeah, this Willy character, great recruitment. She's got banging body, frilly lacy underwear. She's running around like it's 2001. We're mm-hmm. going to get so many recruitments when this movie hits it big. Oh,
what's the underwater
totally
NASA?
Tanked.
Like, is there a NASA for the ocean?
I don't know if there's a NASA for the ocean.
It's Aquatica, the Deep Blue Sea Company, actually.
Oh right, God, yeah. The Tri-Oceanic Company. So they think they've gotten rid of it, but no one notices this big slimy lake.
No one notices this.
We just walk away.
You can't smell it. And this thing just like
It is the size of a fucking turkey. Just squishing
around.
But it looks great.
It looks great. The toes, perfect. Put it on Wiki Feet. I'm sure it'll do big business.
Oh my God. Someone just like flogging the bishop to this fucking Leviathan mutant leg.
Oh, it's got a, I love orange feet with pronated toes.
I mean, it's got the lube ready to go.
Okay, Flintstone. Whatever. So no one smells this thing. It just gives birth to a worm that kills DeJesus.
Oh,
and then
when DeJesus gets killed by this thing,
yeah,
on the wall, and I believe computer paper.
Oh my God,
in
stop
portrait
it.
Mode. There's a sign that says "Hang in there."
Oh,
just good hang advice. In there. No image.
There's no cat, but it definitely says "Hang in there" when he's getting killed by this thing.
My question is: he reaches out, and there's all these cabinets with these tubes with red fluid running through them, and he pulls a bunch of them off the wall, and like. Do they have hot and cold running tomato soup? What's going on?
I was
going
to say that's the Kool-Aid dispenser.
I think it's the coolant, yeah, to keep things chilled. Maybe.
Yeah, that's the future.
Where you have food running throughout your food supply?
Well, it's Kool-Aid. It's cooling the food.
You know what? It's mercury. It's probably fine. We put it in thermometers. We're safe.
They were getting in enough of that with their diet under the sea anyways. It's fine. God. So yeah, he gets an oven filled with teeth to the tum-tum. Mm-hmm. And Jones is like, my name's Paul. This is between y'all. Closes the door behind him.
And
tells Richard Corena, watch that door. To which Richard Corena is like, fuck you. I got to write an email. He runs off.
I mean, who's among us have had to ignore... You know, the death of a coworker because we have an email to write.
But y'all, but the most important part of this computer that he sends the email from is that there is a toy palm tree right by the keyboard that he's typing on.
Yeah.
Well, it just evokes a special tropical feel that he wants to embody. with his multicolored screen.
God. It tells us so much about the character, right? Oh, we're getting real, real rich insight into what drives him. He's very vacation oriented. He likes to go to the beach, maybe. It's all there.
He knows how to take care of him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He goes on vacation, he's not doing excursions. He's relaxing.
Yeah.
He's
watching American Dad waiting for the tidal wave to come in.
We also discover during the sequence that the fish monsters have gone into the hospital section and stolen the blood
supply. All the blood.
Which is evocative, again, of Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah, that is absolutely just completely lifted from that.
Yes.
It's just, like, it elicits another weird reaction, right? It's the same as, you know, oh, Willie's gone in with these weird... underwater slug things and they're going to attack and you're like, no, they're not. And here's like, oh my God, it went after the blood. Beat. And we're like, is that important? You haven't told us why we should care about this.
Right.
But they don't know if it's need blood.
Because in The Thing, it was like, well, you know, it's creating a diversion. Because it is actively trying not to get caught.
Right.
Where here it's just like, I don't know, it's eating it or something.
Yeah.
Maybe you should figure that out. And then that'll help you in trying to win over it.
Because this is when Beck is like, let's take blood from everybody, put it in a bag, and then I'll lure it to one location. And and then someone says it needs blood. And that's Gina. We got a goddamn Dracula.
It's a Dracula fish person. Creature.
It's a twofer.
Yeah.
We're covering, it's animal tanks, but we're still covering Draculas. It's still happening.
It's on brand.
We did it.
You found the perfect crossover film.
And the movie then proceeds us to get you know, see lots of the samey hallways over and over again, lots of wet chains. Like they were definitely watching Aliens and taking notes for wet chains, everybody. And they lure it to one place, but wouldn't you know it, when they get there, it turns out that Doc also turned into a fish person because Cobb got him with the bitey palm.
Yeah.
No. I think Cobb got Doc with the
yeah, palm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, but did y'all know, if you're looking closely at all these like doors as they're running through them, there's a big red button outside of each door.
Okay, Trace, you're cut off.
I was doing what I was told.
No, unless it's interesting, you're not allowed to say anything more. Unless it's like, there's a printed out paper that says, fuck you, God. I don't want to hear about it.
I was told.
Well, we need to know if it's what orientation the paper is, though.
I was told to look at the set, and I goddamn look at the set.
You looked at the hell of it. You definitely took notes.
I didn't pay attention to anything else, but I was looking at the walls the entire fucking time.
What else is there to pay attention to?
I do want to give credit, though, to, I mean, the
to same, me for doing this.
No, definitely not to you. Never to you. I do want to give credit, though, to the set design, because yes, all these hallways look exactly the fucking same, but there is some interesting, like, not like stringy lighting or something, but the piping kind of looks fleshy in parts. And there's a couple of shots of like the tentacles working their way through them, and they almost match. And I thought, oh, okay, that's kind of interesting, the way that we're sort of mirroring, you know, again, it's very The Thing. It's hiding in plain sight. It's matching its environment. But it felt like an interesting touch.
I think they're trying. I think that, and the one giant tube that goes through the hallway that has water sloshing through it.
Oh, I did like that.
I do like that because it makes for interesting lighting.
Also, like, that's the flusher.
That is the flusher. You see poop flusher running through that all the time.
But the poop is just
visible poop running through your hallway. You're like, oh, someone's done a number two. And you get to see it.
You know what? Now we got to flush it. I won't deny, though, when the thing breaks and it just gets Willy, like, fully, I was just like, I couldn't help but think of the Alan Rickman line from that space movie.
Girl, with Rickman.
Rickman, yes. I couldn't help but think of the Alan Rickman line from the Tim Allen movie Galaxy Quest, where he's like, oh, found a way to get your shirt off again, did you? I was like, oh, they found a way to get Amanda Pays, like, wet
again. Yeah. She works best wet, according to this film.
Talk about a tall person. I'm assuming she's very tall because she gives off tall energy.
Yeah, sure. I can believe that. She's at least as tall as everyone else. She might have an inch or two. She might have an inch or two on RoboCop. That's for
it's the tallest cast in history.
And so they all the escape vehicles were, of course, launched by the Doctor. And so they decide, we'll just put air things on our swimsuits.
Sure.
And we'll take those to the very top and
just like holding a balloon and letting the air out.
Yeah.
It's like, and they somehow
they don't get the bends. Yeah. I don't know how that works.
Oh, somehow all these people somehow should have air bubbles. They don't get the bends and they all pop up like right next to each other.
Yes. In the middle of the ocean. But it doesn't take 5 minutes for both sharks and helicopters to show up.
But their suits say decompressing at a certain point right before it ejects their bodies out of the suit. So
yeah, they're decompressing, skull and crossbones, all the things you want to see.
It's that future technology.
Yes.
Right.
Things that are only possible in 2027. And so they fight off some sharks. They hail a helicopter Uber.
I hate the shark sequence. It's so fucking stupid.
It's sort of like, you know, like, oh, we're like 85 minutes. We need to throw in another like 2 minutes of something.
No, yeah. it's y'all, we have 5 minutes left of this movie. We've done Alien. We've done The Thing. What else can we do that's in the water? Jaws. Oh, my God.
Have a couple Jaws.
This would work better if one of them was eaten by a giant shark.
Right.
Like, sure. Why not?
Ooh, sure. No. Have it be they're about to get eaten by the shark, and then the fish monster comes out and eats the shark.
Yes.
Right. Picks it up and takes a bite out
of it. Or just like,
right,
or just like comes up and like, you know, its head hits the shark and the shark is just like launched out of the water. Well,
because then there would be like some like kind of a wink, wink, like humor to it, right? Like, oh, we're doing Jaws, but then our creature kills Jaws.
Yeah.
The creature throws a shark against a rock so hard that just license plates explode out of it. But,
I'm sorry, but I love that that you call it the helicopter Uber, because I was like, man, they're really lucky there was a helicopter flying around the middle of the fucking ocean where they were.
Right where they were.
No, but it's because they sent off the signal. Remember, he hit the button that didn't open a door. It just sent an SOS signal. So we knew that they were looking for them somewhere.
I guess I thought the company would have blocked that signal.
Did you maybe see a poster? Was it landscape?
There was actually a piece of paper, and it was computer paper that was taped to the ocean.
Taped to the ocean.
And it said block signal.
Just floating by.
They get the helicopter lands, and then immediately they're like, wait a second, we forgot to kill the black guy.
Yeah.
So they very rudely somehow murder Ernie Hudson.
Well, it's so disappointing.
You can hear him go like, go to the helicopter, save yourselves. And I'm like, motherfucker, what are you talking about? You save yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's this great moment where it seems as though Beck is going to come back and save him. And then, you know, and then Willie just goes, no, come back. And he's like, okay.
Okay.
But wait.
Wait a second. I'm going to basketball toss this grenade I have somehow.
What is into its mouth? Is it say, ah, motherfucker?
Something like that.
It's not memorable, but he says something.
It's not quite smile, motherfucker, but it is something, something, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense because he hasn't been quippy the whole time. That was Jones's role in this movie.
Right. So why not allow him to do it? It's just so fucking rude.
It's like, do we have to pay Ernie Hudson more if he makes it to the credits?
I think you guys were right in that the film just feels the need to maintain heteroorthodoxy as whitely as possible and rid ourselves of this pesky, talented, handsome black man.
But the thing
is, the movie can proceed.
But the thing
is, they can punch another woman.
But the thing is, I could forgive killing Ernie Hudson here if it was a good death. But it's arguably the weakest death in the film.
You don't even know how he dies.
From what I can gather, the creature slaps him down and he gets like trapped underwater under this creature's like claw thing. And I think he drowns. Show me this thing like with Ernie Hudson half in its mouth.
Mm-hmm. Right. Something memorable to make a sacrifice worth something. But it's like, they decided this at the last moment that they were going to kill his character.
Ugh. Yeah.
And so that's why you don't see it, because they don't really know how to do it. They didn't prepare for it. They don't have a gag worked up. It's just like, get rid of this extra guy. Why?
The tagline for Deep Star 6 is, not all aliens come from space.
Ooh, okay. Not bad.
But that's, you're just giving like, hey, we're doing Alien underwater, y'all.
Yeah, but okay, fat alien underwater.
The weird thing about Deep Star 6 is that it has a very similar ending. It's like they have the flotation device that they're all like perched on in the ocean, and then the thing jumps up and like attacks them, but then they work together to get rid of it. And it's just so much more satisfying.
And honestly, the fact that you can surface kind of has the thing that space doesn't. You can't just surface in space. Like,
no.
If I just get to this one thing, I'll be safe and there's breathable air. That's not true in space. It is true underwater. Yeah. It does take something away from it, with the exception of Underwater, the one movie that I feel really does this right. I'm a big Underwater stan. I think that was the last movie I saw pre-pandemic.
I need to watch it again. I remember I went to a screening and I was so hungover that I couldn't really appreciate the movie.
Yeah, we liked parts of it. I think it
does it right.
Yeah, I like parts of it. But I was left kind of with a shrug at the end. I like the Cthulhu ending. Spoiler, sorry, for Underwater. But I just kind of walked out like, oh, like I like the taste of what I got, but I didn't walk out thinking it really went there hard enough.
Right. I feel like that first act is so fucking killer. And then it finds the way to make a second act out of walking on the ocean floor. That it's so fucking audacious. And yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a spoiler to say there's a Cthulhu at the end. I think there's a spoiler to say how it actually ends. But
right. Yes.
I think that is a good movie, a solidly good movie.
I think it's a very well-made movie. I need to give it a rewatch. I need to give it another like sober watch.
Right. Sure. Of course, if you want to see a bad walk across the ocean sequence, you could just watch The Meg 2, and then that would help you to really appreciate Underwater.
Yes, it really does. The entire time that was happening, I was leaning over to my son, you got to watch Underwater. That's walking along the ocean done.
Okay,
right.
But the Meg 2 has a really great last 40 minutes.
Right, where the sharks don't matter so much because they've thrown a bunch of other aquatic nasties at it. Like,
it's great. It's awesome. Yeah.
The film wakes up and becomes an action movie. Yes, right. I do enjoy
it. It's just a shame it's a two-hour movie, so you got to wait 80 minutes to get there.
Yeah.
And of course, the absolute best walk across the ocean was Jason Voorhees. Jason takes
Manhattan. Taking a chill stroll from Jersey to New York.
But y'all know, if there was just a movie that was like, oh, we're going to do like a sidequel to Jason Takes Manhattan, and it's literally just watching Jason walk across the ocean floor for 90 minutes, those fans would eat that shit up. He would just stab a fish every now and then.
In line.
Why don't we just do another fan-made video and just upload it onto YouTube? Because it's like you could just do some actor like dressed as Jason walking across the bottom of a pool for 90 minutes.
Will he breathe as hard as that Jason actor? Because that is my favorite thing.
But then you zag on everybody by having a musical rendition where they do a cover of Under the Sea.
Sure.
And how does this movie end? Oh, RoboCop punches Meg Foster in the face. Mm-hmm. And we're like, yay! Movie over. So let's choose our own death venture. And there's a lot of variety here. So of the deaths portrayed in this film, which way would you choose to die and why? You can either become a fish person or commit suicide in a shower. That's it.
Whatever the hell happens to Ernie Hudson's character.
I was going
to
say, I might want that.
Drown,
because
I guess?
Because the unknown factor makes it the most likely to be the least painful.
He could just get smacked real hard.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah. That's a quick death. But again, you know, I maintain maybe I want to be on this fish monster, you know, just conscious, but I'm getting fed by whatever it's eaten. And I'm just kind of going, oh, kill me. But like, not.
How much American Dad you gonna watch being a part of that fish body?
Yeah, honestly, if it eats, we don't know if this gets like kind of like Tetsuo the Iron Man. So maybe it absorbs technology and it becomes like a biotechnology thing, like a la David Cronenberg. And then I can watch TV on it.
Trace, maybe it becomes a printer and then you could print out pages that you could stick on the ocean.
You can be my tape dispenser too.
All right, Joe, what say you?
You know what? I'm going to go with whatever fate befell the Russian captain, where he's just delivering an address warning the world of something, and then the tape just goes off and presumably he dies.
I guess that's when the boat blows up. So I guess you could be blown up on a boat.
There we go. Yes. You know what? Blown up on a boat. Sounds rich.
But see, okay, I'm always afraid for an explosion, though, because there's every chance you won't actually die in the explosion and you'll just be left like burned beyond belief.
Sure.
But you're in the ocean. You're not going to last long. No matter, like, you know what will put out the fire? The ocean you're sinking into.
Right.
Gina, what say you?
Yeah, I think I'm going to take Bowman's way out because, you know, she was a fun gal. She was laid back. She was having a good time. She was everybody's pal.
Sure, but, out.
You know, and she didn't want to suffer. So I'm gonna take that. I mean, yeah, I realize that you know the boobs are gonna be just on display for everybody to see, but I'm gonna be dead. What do I care? Enjoy yourselves. Take a look.
Take a gander. Check these out.
Exactly.
Look at them. I'm going to
merge
minutes.
Into this fish man now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm totally going out in the shower just because I like a long shower and I don't get it. I live in Los Angeles. I can't take long showers anymore. This is a dream come true for me. So that just about does it. Joe, Trace, why don't you tell everybody where they can find and hear more from you?
Okay, so yes, we have a podcast called Horror Queers. It comes out every Wednesday. It's part of Bloody FM's podcast network, and you can find it at Horror Queers or anywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, do it today, people. I can't recommend Horror Queers enough. It's a part of my weekly podcast diet. I have enjoyed it. I love it. I love reading the articles after the fact. It's good stuff, in my opinion. Gina, where can people see and hear more from you on these here internets?
Well, people would specifically like to hear me and Joe talk more often to each other. He and I are on another podcast, a little side project called White Ladies in Crisis, that right now it is monthly, in which we talk about movies about White Ladies in Crisis. So that's about it does what it says in the tin. I also... write about movies and television at spool.net. I have a Substack, Gina Watches Things.substack.com, and I am on most social medias under Gina Does Things.
Do it today, people. Check it out. We're on Patreon for super cool bonus episode activity. Come join us there. We're on most of your socials except for Twitter. Fuck that place. And rate and review us on your podcatcher of choice. It helps us be seen and heard by more people. You can also listen to us on YouTube if that is your choice. As lately, the YouTubes have been on fire for our episode of Skate Town USA.
Oh.
It is finally truly 90% of our listens right now.
Finally. Wow. I'm so happy for that to get some love.
It is a great episode. It is a weird ass movie. People should be into it. I don't know why it has leapt to the top, but it has by such a monumental degree, by thousands and thousands of listens.
Holy shit.
Please, there's more where Skate Town USA came from. But that just about does it. We talked for longer than the movie lays. That's important. For myself, for Gina, for Joe, for Trace. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye-bye.